I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
One, a two, and the T, go!
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus.
Breast implants for women are relatively new, going back only a few decades. However, penis extensions go back as far as the invention of the automobile, because there's a lot of guys out there who use their cars as penis extensions. Then there's other guys out there who just like the mechanics of a car, can appreciate when a car drives properly, or like the getting under the hood, fiddling around with it, though nowadays you'll need a couple of computers to do that. There's some people who buy cars to impress other people. There are some people who buy cars, expensive cars, to reward themselves for having worked very, very hard. There's a lot of reasons why men have their relationships with cars. I have never met a woman who has given her car a name. I have met many men who have given their cars actual names. One of them even had the car's name, Vera, painted on both sides on the back. So there is a complicated relationship between men and cars, and certainly Madison Avenue has helped with that, with going way back, especially to the 50s is when I'd say this really, really started. There was an association built between freedom, which was always marketed as a male thing, virility, strength, power, and your automobile. So today we're going to talk about men and their cars. And we've got a panel that has very different relationships with their vehicles for various different reasons. First, I'll go to Hafiz Narani, the producer of our show. Hafiz, welcome.
Thank you.
And Hafiz, are you here because you're the producer and you're always here and contribute great things, or do you have a particular relationship with a car?
You know what? I have named a car. I've named a couple cars. I love my cars that I've owned. I'm not a hands-on repair type of guy. I do know a little bit about what's underneath the hood of my vehicle, but I've always liked F1 racing. I've always liked sports cars, and I like SUVs.
Okay. All right. Michael Lewis, you're from which part of our country?
I am in Vancouver, BC.
Okay. And you are a dentist?
I am not a dentist. I need a dentist, though.
Okay. Well, we have a dentist on the panel, so hopefully the two of you can get together. Michael, tell us about your relationship with cars.
I actually import vehicles from Japan with my business. I've always had Japanese cars. I like to modify them and make them real nice, and then I usually get bored of them in a year and switch it up.
Okay, so someone with a very long attention span.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I have vehicle ADD.
Okay. Well, we'll try to keep the sentences short so we don't lose you. Thanks for joining us, Michael. The actual dentist, Ricky Sachdeva. And are you in BC as well?
Good morning. I'm in Burnaby, yes.
Yeah, Burnaby, BC. Fine part of our country. Tell us about your relationship with cars. It is not a business for you, as it is for Michael. You are professionally, you are a medical professional, you're a dentist. So tell us your relationship with cars.
Basically, I started off in my teens with a simple boom system, like the subwoofers in the back. That's how I first started off, as obnoxious as it may be now, but that's how I first started off. And then I've been working on cars on the side for a bit, but then as my career grows, I kind of work on them less. But I have a huge admiration for American muscle, German tuners, Japanese tuners. So, Mike, if you bring in R34s, let me know. But I like them all. Honestly, cars, I have an appreciation for all genres and all types.
Got a bunch of R34 on the way.
All right, and as a dentist, you can actually afford these cars. Okay.
True.
Jeffrey Brown, I'm going to assume you're on the West Coast as well?
Yeah, Vancouver.
Okay. Don't say it sadly. though the last time I was in Vancouver, I had our car towed, and it cost us a fortune. So, but I'm trying not to hold that against the entire West Coast.
Well, so, Mike and I are actually originally from Ontario too.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you're expatriates. Have you heard that Ontario is open for business? We have signs on our highways. So I don't know if that's an enticement, but Jeff, tell us a bit about you professionally and your connection with cars.
Yeah. So I guess professionally, I work in video games. I've actually had the privilege of working on the last three Need for Speed titles. I've had credits on that.
Oh, wow. So you've worked on video games that were about cars.
Yeah, exactly. And actually even got the privilege to kind of go to, because like the area of kind of where our team was working on was all the audio and music. So naturally, to get some of these sound effects, you'd have to go to racetracks and such. And so I remember one of the games, I had to go to kind of like a drift event, and it was kind of cool to be in the car and kind of seeing all the action going on. So
I like how you say that you had to go.
No,
it was a big sacrifice for you. Yeah. Okay. And no, but your personal relationship with cars, besides your professional relationship with the video games, your personal relationship, your personal feelings or affinity or connections with cars is?
So it's always kind of represented a kind of like a freedom as a kind of young age. And I like even the first job that I had was some like shitty roofing job where I just, you know, just saved every penny to kind of get my first car, because it kind of represented that freedom at a very early age. And also kind of a tool, because like I snowboard, it was ability to kind of get out and explore, right? And you wouldn't be able to do that on your feet.
Okay. Andy Willis, I know you're coming from the West Coast.
Yeah.
You're a regular panelist, and we're always glad to have you, because you inject some much needed light in irreverence and I won't say you have a lack of filter, but I'd say that your filter is not at 11. It's more like at about a 2. And it's been a day already.
I've been driving down the freeway. I was listening to Blake Shelton in my Dodge Ram.
You were not.
I blew a flat, and a couple of truck driving women in leather vests came to my rescue, brought me over to a diner. We had some apple pie. We talked about the Republican nominees, and I'm back at home.
You know, the first part of that story
in God's country. I feel safe.
The first part of that story was very similar to the beginning of many letters in Dear Penthouse Forum.
Yeah.
For those who remember that, do you actually drive a truck?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't drive at all.
I won't fault you for listening to Blake Shelton, because Blake Shelton, and one of the greatest Christmas specials of all times was Blake Shelton's Christmas special, which just took the piss out of Christmas specials, and maybe for that reason it only ever aired once. but thank you for joining us, Andy. What's your connection to cars? Do you have one? What's your feeling about cars?
I do. I was obsessed with vintage cars as a kid. I used to go to all the vintage car shows. I grew up in Langley, so there's always a few that would happen there. And I loved it. I mean, I love the smell of the inside of old cars. I love the aesthetic. I would always buy the t-shirts and get mustard stains on them with hot dogs. I loved it.
Well, mentioning the smell of, smell inside cars. We don't know how many of us and how many North Americans were actually conceived in cars.
I was conceived in a spaceship.
You know, I believe that, and I believe it wasn't in this universe. Okay, so let's move on. There is a connection. One of you mentioned connection, a sense of power, a sense of virility that comes from cars. I will say that myself, I'm unlike most of you. I don't give a damn about cars except will it get me from where I need to go to where, from where I am to where I need to go? And will I not get a ticket when I park there? I see people My first reaction when someone pulls up next to me in a very expensive luxury car and does that inevitable but inexplicable look that men give each other when they pull up next to each other or pass each other in cars. And they've got, especially if they have music blasting, my first thought is, you're some kind of putz because you probably paid a lot of money for that car so that you could impress people. And all you're doing is making me think less of you. But I do at the same time have friends. I've an editor, a longtime editor friend who's not a giant earner, but who really appreciates the work that goes into these cars, the development, how they operate. There's a respect and an appreciation for the art of the design of cars and the building of cars, how it all works, how it's all developed. And for that, and he drives a more expensive car as a result. And I get that. I understand that that's not status for him. That for him is an appreciation. For him, it's like driving a Mona Lisa. And there's other people who reward themselves for working very, very hard by having a luxury car. You've had a long day at work, and you may be a decent income earner or a high income earner, or you're a lower income earner and you've saved your damn money. And you come out at the end of a long day when there's been a lot of bullshit, and there's your car, and it maybe reminds you a little bit of why the hell you endured the day you just had. So I understand there's lots of reasons, but there's no question that there is a perception that cars for men are penis extensions. How do you feel about that, Hafiz? And have you ever felt any stirring in your loins when driving a particular car?
You know what? When I first got my license and the first time, my parents had this really beautiful black BMW 323. And I would occasionally get a chance to drive that car. And I particularly liked driving it onto the university campus and hanging out with my friends and then taking that car around. And honestly, when I was alone in that car at night and I got a chance to maybe take it a little bit faster than I'm supposed to, I definitely felt a little something deep, deep inside me.
Deep inside you or towards the middle of you?
Well, I mostly get this like rush in the from the G-force and whatnot right in the chest area as you drive around.
Yeah. So it's not that it made you feel more important. It was the acceleration, the power under the hood.
Yeah. As for feeling more important, I don't know. I've never taken myself very seriously, but there's
that's good.
There's
neither of us have, none of us have either. So,
well, no shit. Clearly, but I mean, you know what? There was a nice thing to driving around a BMW, even if it wasn't mine, having people say, "Ooh, a BMW," but. Since I was a little kid, I always liked BMWs. It was apparently one of my first words. My dad used to buy me these pull back and go BMWs. So it was a really nice thing to be able to have one in the family and drive it around.
All right. What about you, Ricky? Is there any degree of your relationship with cars that stemmed from it being a penis extension?
At first, not necessarily, I wouldn't say penis extension, but it was just like standing out of the crowd. But now more so, it's whatever puts a smile on my face, like whatever checks my boxes, right? So you punch the gas, you hook up and you go. That for me is just a smile, your heart races, you feel alive.
Well, it's standing out from the crowd, using your car to stand out from the crowd is a form of penis extension. Because let's face it, Ron Jeremy stands out from the crowd. And it ain't because of his sterling personality. There was a sense of greater sense of esteem that would be engendered from those around you that you were feeling from having that car. Is that correct?
Just having that appeal for me, I didn't really, at this point in my life, I didn't really care what someone thinks about my car. But for me, I look at it, I'm like, wow. It's beautiful, or so for me, like if it's better than someone else's, I can't comment on that. But for me, it's just like what I like about a car is there for me. That's what I love.
Okay, Michael Lewis, while in no way implying that your manhood needs any extension, have you ever bought a car or experienced a car while driving as a penis extension?
I've certainly extended it. In high school, my first car was a 5-liter Mustang.
Nice.
17.
High school. Well. Yeah.
And I'm very guilty of, you know, pulling in front of the high school when it's letting out and just doing a burnout all the way down the street. So
in high school, every guy is looking for a penis extension because none of us really feel as manly and virile as we pretend we are to the public. But subsequent to that, have you ever felt that rush? Have you ever felt the rush of power or strength or virility? And that was what drew you to buy a car? Or that's what you feel when you're driving a particular car? Have you ever felt that penis extension?
I have, yeah. I mean, you know, back in the day when I was, you know, quite irresponsible, lots of, you know, street racing would take place. But I did find that that would get more attention from other guys than anything. So it became less of a penis extension thing and more to a just an enjoyability factor.
Okay, well, Andrew Willis, an openly homosexual member of our panel, you would have loved having that experience, having more attention from guys with your car as a penis extension doing street racing, no?
I mean, yeah, I also probably would have, like, I mean, I know of a couple dudes that had, like, one had a 65 Mustang. It was, like, 1965 and a half. Like, it was, like, one of those special ones or something. And I used to always hang around him and be like, can you please take me up for a ride on that? Because I just was like, damn, you are going to be so getting laid by me if you do. like, I mean, I don't know. Give it up for free. It was great. I just thought it was so hot, you know, because, you know, I love vintage cars. For me, I'm not too really into, although I will say one thing, and this may be very contentious.
Something contentious? Okay.
I know. I love the Cybertruck by Tesla, and I want one. Like, I flat out want one. I think it is the most sexiest looking thing. It's so modern. It's so futuristic. Boys, what do you think?
Andy,
plus one for the Tesla.
Yeah, Andy, I hate to break it to you. Saying that is not going to make Tesla give you one of them.
I know, that's true.
Okay.
But I like it. Boys, do you like him? I don't know.
Does it, Andy, affect your choice of what car you want to purchase now? That sense of power or esteem or virility or anything like that? Is that a factor in your head when you think about the car you want to buy?
Not really, because I never really had to look at other people for power and esteem because most people weren't giving it to me. So I just kind of always marched to the beat of my own drum. But I'll tell you this: I think when it comes to power and virility, I think there's nothing sexier than a car from the 60s. That era is just great. It's like you're getting out of those big boat cars and it's stretching out super long. And it's before the 70s happened and the oil crisis. So cars weren't getting shorter and shorter and smaller and smaller. I think that's a great era for cars, for powerful, great, ooh, sexy cars.
I think the power and virility for that is being able to afford the gas.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Michael, when buying your own personal vehicle now, does, and be honest, it may not be front of mind, but do you think that in the back of your head you're thinking, well, if I get this car, people are going to look at me a certain way. It's going to create a certain sense of esteem. It's going to make me feel powerful. It's going to make me feel respected. Any of that?
Not really. Most of the cars that I do import for myself, they're a lot more sleeper type cars, like not assuming. So I'm obsessed with station wagons.
I love station wagons. You mean like the one in the original Muppet movie?
Exactly like that.
Okay.
No, but I like cars that are a little unassuming looking, but you know, they have a lot of horsepower or something special about them.
So you like knowing that to other people, this is just a car, but you know that there's, it's like Superman. It's Superman's glasses. The outside of the car looks every day, but you know that underneath it, you know something that the people looking at it and judging you don't know.
Yeah, like I drive a station wagon right now, but there's only 1,500 ever made in this version. And nobody else knows that. Like, that's totally just for me.
Does it have any wood paneling on the side?
It does not have wood paneling, no.
Well, there's still time.
There is still time. Okay. I could do vinyl now. They got vinyl. That'd be easier.
No. It's got to be wood. I will respect you for wood, not for vinyl. Ricky, same question to you. In your decision to buy a car, your attraction to buy a particular car from a particular company and a particular model, does what other people will think of you in driving it factor into your decision?
No, I accidentally, it was a great mistake I made. I bought an xDrive, so I have a BMW as well, like fees, but the xDrive, especially in this winter weather, now we're getting in Vancouver, it has made my life so much more independent in regards to driving. So at that point, I didn't really think much about like the options and all that, but then accidentally I got the all-wheel drive, and this next car I would only get is all-wheel drive. So things like that, I welcome it. And plus, just the twin turbo power I have in my car is unreal.
Okay.
So
now that twin turbo power, that helps you in bad weather, or you're saying you just like the feeling of that power throbbing below your seat?
A bit of both, actually. It's just like, it's enough power to get me going, but also just getting out of bad weather, bad traffic, I can just cut in front of someone or just move out of the way. It just makes me
laugh. If you want to get out of bad traffic, you need to drive a monster truck and just drive over the cars in front of you. Jeff Brown, your thoughts. Does any of that, any self-esteem or what people think of you or you'll think of yourself, go into your decision to buy a car, a particular car?
So I'm pretty much on the same whim like as Michael, where I kind of want to cruise under the radar from a perspective of an everyday driver, but have the ability where it's a tool to be able to get you out of a sticky scenario. But I do find that there is a fine balance between power and especially within this weather, where like even the all-wheel drive, say if you have a car 300 plus horsepower, that's going to actually create more problems.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true.
Well, I know, Hafiz, you've had an expensive car that you got rid of because the cost of maintenance was ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I mean, I switched from the BMW X5 to a Toyota 4Runner it was an older car, but it kept on. I still miss it to a certain degree. It had that really nice comfort feeling. I love my Toyota, and I am able to, you know, with the Toyota be a little bit more less concerned about, you know, what happens to the vehicle when I take it off road or anything like that. And also the gas. I mean, most BMWs, you have to use premium, and you know, with the carbon tax and all that stuff added up, in BC, you're looking at above $1.70 sometimes a liter, as opposed to $1.30, which is, what in my books, is a huge savings too. And it uses less of it, even though it's a vehicle.
So just to drop it in there, by the way, all you guys mentioning your first cars being Mustangs and BMWs, my first car was a 1976 Toyota Corolla.
Mine was a Honda Civic. I just borrowed my mom's Beamer.
It was a piece of crap that the second day I had my license and I drove that car, the steering and brakes locked up and I had a car accident, and that was the end of that car. But I will tell you that over the course of the summer, when I had my 365 and I didn't have my license, I babied that car sitting on the driveway, because it was a symbol of freedom. And I think a subset of freedom for men is virility. And do any of you see, and I'll go through the line, marketing of cars? There are certain cars that are marketed to families, usually they're minivans. There are certain cars that are marketed largely to men, I would say, or to those who have male impulses. Am I wrong? Andy, do you see a car? Do you ever watch TV and see ads and you're like, they're really trying to up the penis quotient in selling this thing?
Oh, definitely in trucks, for sure. I mean, what was it? Ford's Like a Rock commercial? Like, you know, yeah. So, yeah, I definitely see that.
Okay. How about you, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, especially the Dodge lineup, I see, like, all their Chargers and Challengers, they have, like, 800 horsepower now, which is completely unnecessary. So,
well, it's, if you drive, like, listen, if you have 800 horsepower and you're driving in the city of Toronto, that'll get you between stoplights faster, but traffic doesn't move, so it's kind of a waste.
Can I just say one thing though? The Lincoln commercials, I feel like, are commercials for a guy who realizes his dick has stopped working. And it's time for him to get a Lincoln and get really introspective and deep about life, you know?
I thought those were a joke.
Wow. Okay. And Andy also wanted me to ask the question about whether anybody's received highway head, but, you know, that's not the subject of this program.
I'm just a little curious. Like, does it make you feel more manly? You're driving your car and you're getting, and like, something sexual is happening.
Andy,
you
know. That's not this topic. It's okay. Not this topic. All right. Jeff Brown, you're calling it midlife crisis marketing.
Well, I think it just can appeal to a kind of wide variety of like what's kind of going on in your life, right? It's kind of an outlet in that way, right?
Right.
I'm sure people buying Corvettes later on in life, it's not necessarily that they've, you know, have a background in built Corvettes and things like that. They just kind of want their bald like hair to flow in the wind, right?
Well, I also have a friend who, I mean, a lot of people couldn't afford that Corvette until they got to a relatively comfortable, you know, socioeconomic position in middle age and could finally afford that car they'd been looking at their whole life. Now, in our present economy, I would recommend people who are in their late 40s and 50s, don't spend a whole lot of money on cars because your boss is looking to replace you with two 20-somethings who will work for peanuts. So exactly. Don't do it. But in previous generations, that was the car people had been thinking about their whole life. And, you know, you have to, when you're working really hard, you have to have something, not just the roof over your head, not just the ability to provide, you know, you and your spouse to provide a better, you know, way of living or life for yourselves or your children. It's a bit of a reward for, hey, this is the reason I've worked so damned hard. So
yeah, so but those people aren't relying on the marketing, nor are they even being caring about the marketing, right? They're just diehard people.
Regardless. Right. So you don't think, Jeff, that or do you see commercials out there and you think this is just so aimed at spurring testosterone?
I think it's stupid and they should be instead investing in actually doing the proper quality assurance or actually making better products.
So those would be exciting commercials.
Or even do that, like literally just do the product line, because I'm sure most guys would be like, oh my god, that's so cool, and like instead of whatever the fake stuff that they're putting out there now, right?
Right. Okay. Hafiz, commercials. Do you see commercials that are specific, looking at them, they're aimed at men and they're aimed at men who want to get their loins charged?
Well, I mean, every car commercial focuses on the speed and this ability to sort of get out there and avoid traffic or something like that. They always project this dude in their brand of car getting away from the rest of the herd. But you know what? It's interesting, too, because now a lot of car commercials are switching to where it's this specific type of vehicle where they don't even actually use the actual car anymore. It's all digitally animated in. I think all in all, the car commercial has always been tied in with the growth of car culture, whether it was in magazines and whatnot before. And it's a central part of the car ideology, but I think it very much has changed now today, because at the end of the day, men aren't the only purchasers of cars anymore. So you're seeing a lot more women coming into car commercials too, and a different type of mindset in those cars.
But those cars tend to be cars aimed at families.
Not more so much.
They're practical, yet at the same time, stylish.
Well, yes, there is that. But I mean, even cars aimed at men today, you don't see many super sports car commercials, but you'll see the commercial that is for the guy that wants the sports car, but has a wife that would say no. So he gets this sort of car that makes up for both. So it might be made by a sports car company, but it has four doors and can fit a baby seat at the back.
I will say that in my homestead, my wife Leanna is far more enamored of cars and their specs, their look, their power, and so on than I am. Me, I drive a Hyundai, a small Hyundai, because I had a bigger car before and it wasn't an expensive car because I consider it a waste of money. It's the worst investment you could make. You lose value.
Why is Leanna not on this show?
You lose cars because it's called mansplaining. You lose value immediately as soon as you drive it off the lot. It's a terrible investment if you're looking at it financially. But I happened to rent my car broke down and we had to go on a trip, and I went to last minute to a dealer and said, "What have you got?" The only thing they had was this Hyundai. I'm not driving a Hyundai. Why am I advertising them? It was a Kia. Same country that it originates in. A Kia Rio. And I was like, all right, fine. And I found, you know what? I really like driving this car. I actually enjoy this car more than the car I was driving, the bigger, more, you know, longer, more penile car that I was driving. So when it came time to buy a new car, I just bought a Kia Rio because I liked the experience of driving it. Plus, also, if you ever have to try to park in downtown Toronto, you need as small a car as possible. But I, for me, Kia wound up starting, like a lot of companies, like Hyundai and Toyota, selling shit boxes that couldn't stand up to Canadian winters and the salt that's used on the roads, to developing into, you know, good car companies. And my car was designed by the designer that was lured away from either BMW or Audi or something like that. But I don't give a damn. I just know that I like driving the car. It's reliable. And when I see those ads for those trucks, I think, what the hell am I going to put in that giant flatbed in the back? Everything I have is going to get soaked and slide around all over the place. But there again, that's my practicality. I'm not always practical. If you were to look at my office, you'd see that that's true. Car marketing has been tied. Certain cars, certain types of cars, certain types of motor vehicles have been tied to appealing to a man's sense of virility or lack thereof. And virility is a trait that has been drummed into our heads as being masculine. If you're masculine, you're virile. You are independent. You know, somebody mentioned that get away from the crowd and be Lone Wolf McQuaid. Be you know, Clint Eastwood and Dirty Harry or whatever the modern analog is. Do your own thing. You know, in a mass-produced vehicle. Virility has always been something that men have been told we need to express in a particular way, whether it's the way we speak, the way we drive, what we wear. It's always been there. And I think it's less so, but I'll go through the crowd here. I'll start with Michael. Michael, have you ever done stuff? I mean, Am I wrong? Do you interpret, or have you seen marketing that interprets being a man and as being somebody who is virile?
I years ago, I remember like seeing lots of marketing that was, you can certainly see it was directed towards men. But from what I see now with a lot of car companies, they seem to make it a lot more general, because there is a lot more women that are into cars these days, I find.
I think there were always a lot of women that were into cars, but it just wasn't ladylike or womanlike, and I'm using air quotes here, to show an appreciation for vehicles, because that was men's territory. I'm glad that's changing. Ricky, how about you? Do you agree that some of this notion of the car as a powerful vehicle or a powerful means of going your own way, of charting your own course, which is underlying virility and the messages men receive about what it is to be a man, you believe that's there?
I believe it's there. I'm going to refer to a couple of advertisements on YouTube about this. So Ferrari came out with a new Roma, and Lamborghini has the Huracan Evo. They released their advertisements not on general TV, but on YouTube. And basically, the ads have a woman and a man flirting with each other, driving the same car, and just looking at each other and trying to mate through the car commercial. Literally, it's like that. So I think you're right. The times have changed where women are more vocal and more out there in regards to like their appeals and their likes of cars. And it's true in the advertising in that respect.
Okay. Hafiz?
Advertising in cars?
Well, do you still see that that we are subject to not just cars, but marketing that equates, that tells us how to be men, that tells us that we need to be virile, and buy this product, it'll make you more virile, it'll make you more manly, cars and other things. Do you think men are still subject, that there's still, Madison Avenue is still pumping that stuff out there, and that we're still eating it up?
Well, I mean, someone was talking about the Lincoln cars before. I mean, you look at Lincoln's marketing, they get Matthew McConaughey, and they try to project him as this man that attracts women, that's suave, that's sophisticated, that drinks whiskey and then drives his car. Like,
with a limp.
I think. Yeah.
With a what? But, sorry, what was that?
With a limp. With his limp deck, allegedly.
I don't, you know, that's a whole. Andy, once again, a topic for another conversation. Go on, Hafiz.
And the term is pushing rope.
Pushing
rope. Oh, gross. Gross. So I'm straight. That made me straight. Oh,
well.
That's the proper medical term now, I think.
It's a medical term, pushing rope. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm never touching a dick again after this.
Me neither.
Okay, guys, if anybody, if the right person offered Andy a dick in 30 seconds, he'd touch it. So don't buy
maybe
that.
Maybe in 10 seconds.
Right. Okay. Michael?
Yeah.
Were you talking? I lost track there.
I was talking, but sure.
I was talking just about following up on the pushing rope. That was it.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for contributing that bit of valued information. Jeff, do you still see commercials that are like car commercials that are aimed at men that are telling us that virility can be obtained through certain products that are aimed at men, and that being a man means being overtly virile?
I think it's kind of like Mike has said, kind of adapted with the times, thankfully. But I feel like it kind of will go for a split where it'll do those kind of shock value or trying to do outside the norm. But for the most part, like, companies will just kind of do a generalist of like, this is how we're making our car convenient or make your life easier, to kind of appeal to a lot of the kind of people like yourself, where, like, you know, they want to get A to B. They want something that's reliable, as well as it's not going to be very expensive.
Right. I see people who spend there's some cars that are $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, and I think You know, I'd be more impressed if you bought yourself maybe a nice higher-end car and spent the rest of those hundreds of thousands of dollars contributing to charities and making the world a better place instead of you just driving around like a douchebag. But I never get the chance to say that to them because I motion to roll down the window, but they don't, and maybe that's a good thing. And Andy Willis notes that Beetles were advertised, Volkswagen Beetles were advertised to women and Minis to women, and that the 2000s Beetle has a flower vase built in. Is this
true? Yeah.
That was an option, yeah.
Yeah, so there was like a little flower vase that'd be on the top. And actually, like, so the 1999-2000 Beetle, when it hit with its marketing, it did like this whole Busby Berkeley, like women in a swimming pool type thing where it had all these Beetles like in these syncopated sort of like dance. And that was like the video for it. And their ad was, it's beautiful, but it gets you there, which is kind of like saying like, hey, ladies, don't look under the hood. You don't need to. Just drive. Basically. So, I mean, that, and also, like, I didn't really know anyone that looked at a Beetle and said, wow, that's virility in a package. So,
well, yeah. Well, okay, not just that, but now you want another plant. You're responsible for watering, especially in very, and you have to get one that's resistant to all temperatures. Let's face it.
Yes, can I just say one thing, though?
You've said many things, so say another.
Just one more, if I may, my dear friend.
Yes.
So I worked at a country club for, like, you know, like 4 years. And this country club is like the number one in Canada, actually. So, like, even in the West Coast, it's not just West Coast, it's number one everywhere. So we would have, like, billionaires that were members. And you could tell the difference between who was a dick and who was not just by looking at their car. So like you would have people who were like billionaires and millionaires driving like a 1997 Mercedes. Okay.
Right.
And then you'd have like people that didn't really have all that much money.
Wait, those are non-dicks, right?
Oh yeah. Non-dicks. Like totally like super chill, like nothing wild.
Well, it's like Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, always drove just an older pickup truck because he had nothing to prove.
Right. And like, you know, I mean, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to, you know, have anyone know about who drives what. But, you know, yeah, there were certain people that were like, you would expect would be driving these like $1 million cars or $500,000 cars. And they were driving like literally a pickup truck, like just a plain old pickup truck, you know. So, yeah. So I definitely feel like there's a connection between like people wanting to status signal, of course, their cars. Also something interesting, and I did love this a lot. There was a lot of white Range Rovers, and I was like, why are there so many white Range Rovers? And as it turns out, and I asked my friend in the Persian community, apparently like having a white car is like a big deal. So I don't know if anyone
wait, hang on a second. White Range Rover privilege?
I don't know if this is like a thing, but I verified this with other people in the Persian community, and they said they're like, yeah, like white cars are like a thing. And I'm like, oh, okay. I don't know if it has to do with like they're white, so they get dirtier easily. So it's like if you have like a clean, pristine white car, like it's, I don't know, but it's such a fascinating world we live in.
Isn't it? And you know, the thing you said about status symboling, which is for me a form of penis extension, waving your dick in the air. I don't know how many of you have spent time in Los Angeles. But I've had the misfortune of there were times I spent 3 months out of the year in different lengths of trips in Los Angeles shooting stuff for television. And you would have people there who drove Porsches and very expensive cars. And you would drive up the road into the valley and you would see these inexpensive, some of these places look like they were falling down, these homes, but you would see very expensive cars in the driveway. The people put all their money, and the cars were no doubt leased, but they put all their money into these expensive cars and not into where they lived because they were more interested in pulling up to meetings like a player and driving around showing off their vehicle and their supposed status than they were interested in the quality of life they had in the place that they lived their life, their home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, didn't the old Big Timers hip hop track go, I got a quarter tank of gas in my new E-Class? I mean, that's a classic archetype of someone that buys a really expensive car, but that can barely afford it.
I actually want to go against the grain here. Sorry.
Yes, go against the grain, please, Ricky.
Okay, so basically, I know a couple of celebrities that, Ludacris, for example, a rapper, he still has his original 1991 Acura Legend because he says it grounds him. And he hasn't sold it. I'm serious. He actually looked at it. Ludacris still has his 91 Acura Legend. And also Canada's poster boy hero, Quiet Leonard, still has his GMC Tahoe from when he was starting up. And he drives it to and from practice.
Does Drake still have his wheelchair from Degrassi to kind of bring him back to his roots? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that and his little Shoppers Drug Mart tag with his name on it from when he had part-time jobs back then. Yeah. You know what, though? The examples that Ricky cited are people who don't want to lose sight of where they came from. Who keep their head above, head on their shoulders, because the worst thing you can do in any field or in any part of life is get high off the smoke people blow up your ass. And when you're in show business and you're successful, there's an awful lot of smoke being blown up your ass. So people who, like Ludacris, who get into their vehicle and have a constant reminder that you're not the shit. You're successful in your field, but that doesn't make you better than the rest of the human race. I have respect for that.
That was like Mr. T. You remember Mr. T back in the day?
What do you mean, remember Mr. T? That's like asking if I remember Jesus.
He used to wear his old basketball shoes that were duct taped together. Keep him grounded, he said.
Yeah.
Remember where he came from.
Remember Mr. T. Remember? No, he was not on coke. Mr. T, clean. Pity the fool. Don't anybody speak smack, talk smack about Mr. T on this show. I'm choking already on it.
Am I the only person that doesn't have a car? Like, does anyone else not have a car?
Dead silence. So you don't have a car. Have you ever had a car, Andy?
No, I haven't, actually. But I will tell you this. I, for the last maybe 10 years, have already been like, this is the car I want to get when I get a car. And I want to get a 1980s Datsun, like a Nissan Datsun.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Pickup truck. My grandmother, she used to drive one, and we'd always make a joke that she's like, "It's it's such garbage. Not even the landfill will take it." It would get around everyone. I loved it. I just love that this woman in her 40s and 50s was driving around in a pickup truck. A shitbox pickup truck. I thought it was so cool. So,
Thing is that if you were to drive around now in a vintage Datsun truck, that is its own status symbol. Also, good luck finding parts.
I actually have three of those on the way from Japan currently. They're Nissan Sunnies, and they're very popular.
What type of car is that? Is that a truck?
It's a little. It's basically a Datsun pickup truck, but they were branded Nissan in Japan.
I don't want to be one of those hipster assholes who drives around in a Winnebago or whatever it is,
Something to be ironic, you mean? Something ironic, like an ironic beard?
Yeah, I do not want, I really like that truck because it had a personal meaning, but then also I would never want to be that guy who pulls up into the lot and they're, in this insane Fakakta Mercedes or whatever. I don't want that. I'd rather someone just be like, whoa, if he's okay, just pulling up in just a regular old car, what type of person is he, So,
yeah. You know, he must have a massive hog. That's what they're thinking.
If he's driving that, he doesn't need to extend his penis. I'll tell you a few years back, when I was partnered, Leanne and I were partnered with an American digital media company that was flush with cash and was given us cash for the content we were producing. They came to Toronto and I said, let's go. I'm going to take you out for dinner. And I picked them up in my Chrysler Intrepid. I happen to like the damn car. And there was two of them and one of them was the owner of the company and he almost didn't want to get in the car. This is a guy of privilege.
Is he from LA?
Yes.
Yeah.
From a wealthy background. Right. He got in and he said, and I could tell his discomfort. I said, "You're probably wondering why I'm driving this car." He says, "Yeah, I expected, with your stature in show business in this country, I expected that you'd be driving a BMW or an Audi or something." And I said, "Well, since you're the one who's paying for my show, you can now be assured that the money that you're giving us, I'm not just throwing wastefully into cars."
Exactly.
It didn't impress him. It still that did not impress him. But two quick questions. One, Andy, you say you've never had a car.
I don't even have a license.
Okay, so you have to get around places. Is this at all related to the question you asked earlier about whether people have ever received highway head? And was that your attempt to get around?
You know what? No, but now that I think about it, boys, anyone
takers?
Want to give me a ride? Okay. Anyone want to pull up in a 65 Mustang?
Yeah. There okay. We go, having Andy hollering all the way on down Steve that Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Steven, I love you.
Thank you very much. And Michael, you're the car importer, correct?
Yeah.
I have to ask you, and feel free to decline to answer because you may have customers listening, but do you sell cars to a lot of douchebags?
I don't actually sell cars, but I just import them, so I don't really have a relationship with these.
So you import them to dealers who then sell them to douchebags. So you're one step removed from the douchebaggery.
Yeah, correct. I used to work in dealerships, and I will say I did leave it for a reason. Some of the people I was dealing with are a little bit tiresome, but...
Well, let me tell you this. I have no negative judgments against people who manage to make their living or make money off the vanity and insecurity and douchebaggery of other people. Good for you, because we have to endure those people every day. So if other people can make money off of them, make them pay a douchebag tax, I'm all for it.
Tax.
Yeah,
I will say with the price point in Japanese cars, it was a lot of they're not that expensive, so it was a lot of like hardworking kids, like tradesmen and stuff like that. So it was a lot of good people.
This is just their toy. You know,
what
separates the men from the boys is the size of their toys.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and they were working really hard to afford these cars and like come and buy them cash and.
Okay, so these were people. These were investments. These were lifelong dreams. I've always wanted to drive a 1980s Jaguar convertible.
Well,
I love that car.
Like the present.
forget it. You know what? First of all, what kind of operating condition will it be in today? And secondly, the cost of the parts. I could buy a number of other cars outright. Jeff Brown, don't want to leave you out. Any other comments you want to contribute to this?
Yeah, just on your kind of like last note, actually is a good point of kind of where the kind of car development or where kind of the industry is kind of gravitating to, where like, I'm sorry, cars used to be a lot more kind of basic, and now things are getting so complicated and so many sensors and it's self-driving, where does there actually become a point where these tools are starting to get tarnished by our inventions?
It's interesting. Self-driving cars. I wonder how much that will change the virility factor. It won't. It'll just be I'm driving a more expensive self-driving car.
That's actually my nightmare. A world full of self-driving cars. That is the most boring existence to me. That would just be...
Do what it will do. It'll improve Andy's chances of that roadhead because no one's fucking having to pay attention to the fucking road.
Can I just say, though, can we give a shout out to the number one most famous Canadian car, which is the shitbox on Trailer Park Boys? And also the second most famous car in Canada, which is the van that followed Terry Fox?
Yes. Okay.
Shout out to both.
Shout out to both. Also a shout out, this may have been just a Toronto thing or an Ontario thing, to Blinky, the police car that used to come to elementary schools that was anthropomorphized with eyes and stuff like that. That was pretty famous when I was growing up. That
I remember Blinky.
Yeah, well, it gives people a sense of our vintage. That's it. I want to thank everybody for participating in the program today. We talked about stuff. We had a few laughs. And, I mean, hey, mansplaining is all about men talking to men about being men in 2020, how we can be better men. And part of that is discussing media images and purchases and other things that try to tell us how to be men and how to resist them, because invariably they're toxic. So thank you guys. I want to thank Michael Lewis. I want to thank Ricky Sachdeva. I want to thank Jeffrey Brown. Of course, our producer, Hafiz Nourani. Thank you very much for putting together another wonderful show. And of course, I have to thank Andy Willis for injecting his Andy Willisry into this program, as he does every episode of Mansplaining. If you when you check out the information about this show, there'll be information as to where you can find all of these fine people if you wish to continue a conversation. But the other person in media here is Andy Willis with Andyland Radio, which you can find streaming at any time, right? You can...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go to andylineradio.com. It's all the episodes are there. And every Wednesday, we're live, 10:30 Pacific, 12:30 Central on CITR 101.9 FM.
Okay, and is there a contact email there in case anybody listening wants to take you up on your offer?
You know what? Send it to press at andylineradio.com. That's a real email address, and it definitely will get forwarded to me with a question mark, I'm sure.
Okay. And guys, if you want to take Andy up on his offer, please make sure
you... I'm done with dicks now. I'm telling you, I'm done. That pulling rope, I'm gross now.
Guys,
It's pushing rope. Pushing rope, man.
Yeah, just make sure you're clean there, okay? Clean. It's just a courtesy. And Andy, no one believes you for 5 seconds. Okay. Thank you all. You've been listening to Mansplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner filling in for the on hiatus at the SOC here on Fun the FU Network, which is the division we're on is FU Politics. And if you want to help keep programs like this going, where we talk about stuff in ways that nobody else talks about, but things that people want to talk about and want to hear people talk about, have a laugh, have a chance to think about something, consider issues, but at the same time, enjoy yourself. No barriers to entry with using jargon or pundits or the kind of stories that excite the political and media classes, but the average person doesn't give a crap about. This is grassroots, direct to you programming. FU Network, FU stands for what it stands for, an attitude, but also for us and for you. So if you'd like to help keep this kind of programming going, because yeah, it doesn't cost a whole lot to produce, but it does cost a whole lot to research and post-produce. And the websites cost money to maintain, and the artists who make the thumbnails cost, and maintaining equipment costs. Right now, our laptop that launched this network is dead as a doornail. Money's not in the budget to replace it. So while people who, very high corporate people, have their very high corporate sponsorship of very high corporate programs, we're here for you because we are you. So if you'd like to help us out, Patreon is a monthly subscription service. Starts at $1. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com. You can help us out with a subscription, $1, $5, $20, whatever. All of it helps, just like you can't do anything with a single brick, but with many bricks, you can build a house. So help us with your brick. Donate what you can afford at patreon.com/funetwork.tv. I got that wrong. patreon.com/funetworktv all at once. patreon.com/funetworktv. If you don't want to have to be making a monthly commitment and you want to just, hey, give us a few bucks for this program, help us keep going, you can do that through PayPal. And our email address, funetworktv No, I screwed that up too. FU Network. No, I got this right. FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. So PayPal, you use our email address, FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Sorry, guys. I've only been guest hosting a couple of weeks and starting to show. And right now, it's just starting to sink in, that whole pushing rope thing. So if you'd like to help us out, we appreciate it. And if you don't have financial resources to contribute, but you have skills and talent and time, and you'd like to be part of the cause, by all means, that has tremendous value to us as well. Tremendous value. So contact us. And believe me, there's a lot of people contacting me saying, I'd like to help, but they list all the reasons that they don't have skills. You know, they don't have experience. They don't have anything that can help us. Every one of them, we've found a way for them to help us and to learn and grow as well and be part of this. So if you want to help out with your time, your talents, that's very, very welcome and appreciated. Just go to hey@funetwork.tv. Hey is spelled H-E-Y, not the hee-haw way. H-E-Y at funetwork.tv. And at this point, I realize just how many references I've dropped into this from the 80s and early 90s. So if you can relate to those, I'm glad you got that little boost out of those Easter eggs. It's kind of like having a vase in your VW Beetle. Or Mini or whatever car it was. Thank you, everybody. I'm Stephen Kersner. And for everybody on our panel, thank you for listening and have yourselves a great week. Or choose not to. I leave it up to you. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus. I'm Ed DeSock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network. Powered by your support on Patreon.com. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. And through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader.